Charlotte, the floor is yours. Please entertain us.
Well, hello everyone. I'd like to point out that there are two exciting talks going in parallel to this talk, so this is your chance to leave the hall and listen to the other talks. If you think this is a talk that will show you all kinds of strange things that have happened to phones, then this is not the talk, or this is not what you're going to hear. This talk is about how you can actually do fuzzing on mobile phones. It is not what are the results of the fuzzing. This is the how to do, not the result kind of talk. So if you know, the actual procedure and how to do that is too boring, you can just leave once again. I just don't want anyone to be disappointed. So, well, two or three lines about myself. I'm a random hacker. I've been using and playing with Linux for quite some time now, doing bootloader kernel driver development, had sort of an IT security interest for quite some time. I do some electrical engineering. And I'm always interested in communication protocols. Doesn't matter whether it's RFID or DECT or GSM or TCP/IP or whatnot. Anything that's below the application level is interesting. One thing that has always startled me for quite some time is there's such a discrepancy between the security research that is being done in the TCP/IP world and the security research that has been doing or is being done the mobile networks protocol world. Right. I mean, both the GSM and 3G, as well as the TCP/IP protocol specification, are publicly available. They're publicly available. There's no secrecy about that. You can go to the 3GPP website, you can go to the ETSI website, and you can download all the specifications that you need for protocol level work or security research or even implementations in GSM, just as well as you can go to the IETF website and read RFCs about TCP/IP. Also, we see, of course, and I think everyone in this room is very well aware of that, that Internet Protocol Stack, which is TCP/IP on top of Ethernet or Wi-Fi or God knows what other protocol, receives a lot of scrutiny. I mean, even 15 years ago, people were sending things like Christmas packets with all the invalid bit combinations in the TCP header, and we had pings of death against whatever, Windows 98 or whatever it was, and so on. I've never heard of anything like that in the mobile world, and that's quite a bit of a surprise to me, at least. So the GSM and 3G networks are also as well and as widely deployed as the Internet is. As Carsten has pointed out in his talk yesterday on GSM cryptography, the GSM Association claims 4 billion users worldwide. I don't know if somebody has accurate statistics on the number of Internet users, but I think it's somewhere in the same order of magnitude. Probably or most likely even less than mobile phone users. But it's a widely deployed network. The specifications are available, but still it doesn't receive all that much security research. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One of that is that the industry is extremely closed, and I have to add closed-minded as well. And there is, to my knowledge, since it is so closed, it's hard to obtain knowledge, but to my knowledge, there is only about 4 closed-source protocol stack implementations that are out there. The GSM chipset makers never release any hardware documentation. It's not like an Ethernet card where you can download the data sheet for your Mac controller and you can go ahead and write your own Ethernet driver and TCP/IP stack on top of that. Let's have a look at the industry that drives mobile phones, mobile communication. First, the handset manufacturing side. There's only very few companies that build the baseband chips that are put into current, today, mobile phones. those few companies then license proprietary operating system kernels and proprietary protocol stacks from third parties. And then they ship that to handset makers. And even the number of handset makers is extremely small, especially for the 3G devices. There are not that many actual handset manufacturers out there. You might, may find many brands, but when it comes down who manufactures these, it's not that many. And even those handset makers, they don't get access to the documentation and or the full source code of whatever they're running. They're again using a proprietary operating system kernel that has been passed to them through the chipset maker. And they're using a proprietary protocol stack that they might have, if they're really big and important customer, then they might get partial source code to that or even complete source code. But in many cases, the smaller handset makers, they don't even get the source code for the stack themselves either. So they get this two massive blobs and they put it in a product and somehow it works and then they ship it. If we look at the network equipment manufacturing side, it's relatively similar. There's only very few companies today that build network equipment. You find well-known names like Ericsson, Nokia, Siemens Networks, Alcatel-Lucent, and Huawei. You find a couple of small manufacturers that build picocell and nanocell femtocell devices, but and special purpose law enforcement equipment such as Rohde and Schwarz. But that's about it. Once again, very few companies that provide the technology that these networks run. I mean, just compare that to the internet, where there is I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of companies that have that build devices and even at least tens of different of companies that build Ethernet chips or Wi-Fi chips. And then you get the documentation, and your protocol stack can be open source if you want to use Linux or BSD, for example, or even other operating systems that are of an open source nature. In the GSM network manufacturing side, only operators are customers for the network side equipment, and if you look at the operators, there are much less operators for mobile networks than there are operators of TCP/IP based networks Internet providers, for that matter. So there's a small group of operators that buys equipment from a small group of manufacturers who, in turn, licenses proprietary stuff from a small group of companies. And all is very secretive. And the cost, since it's high-grade professional network equipment, is relatively high. So even for the smallest element in the GSM network, which is the base transceiver station, BTS, you can easily pay between 10 and 40,000 euros or dollars or whatever. So it's not really something an independent researcher can easily get access to, or your random student can get access to. Like he just can buy, today it's even hard to buy a system that doesn't have an Ethernet chip, and then you run your open source Linux or BSD protocol stack on top, and then you can play with the protocol stack inside. If you look at the network operator side, then I don't want to offend anyone, but operators are mainly banks today. They're not a technology company, they're banks. They even outsource billing. Many people don't know that, so even the billing is outsourced. And I'm not even talking about network planning or network deployment or network servicing, which is all outsourced, of course, too. So the operator just knows the closed source and whatever otherwise closed equipment as it is shipped by the manufacturer, and they very, very rarely have people who understand the intrinsics and the deep details of the actual protocol. So that is sort of a knowledge problem. So when we look at the security implications of all this on the GSM system, then there are almost no people who have detailed technical knowledge outside the protocol stack or GSM network equipment vendors. Compare that to TCP/IP networking, where every student on this planet, I believe at least in every halfway decent course at university, talking about computer science students or communications students, they learn about TCP/IP and they can play with it, and they probably start up Wireshark and look at packets and see what's going on. That's very different in the GSM world. So there is very little independent protocol level security research. If there is research at all, then typically it is very theoretical, like the crypto analysis of A51 and A52, which is turning more practical right now, but then at least for the last decade it was very theoretical. On application level, you also find security analysis. But that's a different topic altogether. Of course, if there's a web browser on the phone, then of course I can try to exploit bugs in that web browser. But that doesn't really relate to GSM. It relates to the web browser that happens to run on a mobile computer that people tend to call phone rather than computer. But it is not inherently a GSM or a 3G security issue. So there are no open source implementations, well, at least until about a year ago, or, well, 1.5 years ago. And that means that people cannot really learn about the protocols in a practical way. I mean, everyone here understands that if I have some system running in front of me and I can play with it and I can actually, make it do some things, then that is much more, you will have much more interest in learning about it, as opposed to just reading in a textbook and yes, okay, there is somebody as an operator who can configure this portion of his network in a certain way and then it might behave differently. But then that's like, okay. You can't really try it. And if you cannot try it, many people are not interested in it. So if you wanted to do a security analysis of GSM and on a protocol level, what would you do? There is different approaches to do that, of course. You can try to address the problem from the handset side. So you can try to do something like modifying an existing handset or try to implement your own protocol stack on a handset or your own, whatever, an attack tool or whatever, like Dieter Spahr did and just in the presentation that was preceding this presentation. You can do that, but it is extremely difficult since the firmware that runs on those GSM baseband chips and the protocol stack inside that firmware is closed and proprietary in 99.9% of the cases. And in most of the cases, in addition, there is a DRM mechanisms with signed binaries, and you need to circumvent those mechanisms and so on. Yes, it can be done, but it is difficult. And given the size of the code that we're talking about, we're easily talking about somewhere between 3 or 4 megabytes of object code. This is not just a small, 10 kilobyte firmware image. It's massive. And if you want to reverse engineer reasonable amounts of the code in there, then you will spend a lot of time, and by the time you finish, the product is no longer sold anyway, and nobody will be able to reproduce your results without trying to hunt down some extremely old equipment on eBay. So if you want to write your own protocol stack, not on a regular handset or on any device, then of course you need documentation on the baseband chipset. And yes, of course, there's an ARM CPU in that, but okay, the interesting part is the peripherals, the memory map, the register level specification. How can I write actual drivers for the integrated peripherals in that chipset? Not the fact that yes, there is an ARM instruction set. That doesn't matter. So it is undocumented, and you don't really get much access to this. There's two known attempts. One is the TSM30 project, became part of the THC GSM project. Before that, it was called Project Black Sphere, but the TSM30 project, which works with the TSM30 phone, and then that's also the MadOS project, which is part of Project Black Sphere, on some old Nokia DCT3 phones, things like this, the 3310, which, as I say, it's very old hardware, hard to get. Well, not hard, but so if you start now working on something like this, then by the time you're finished, the hardware will be even less easily accessible. So there's not much success coming out of these projects. Now, the other way you have is you try to address the problem from the network side. The difficulty here is that the equipment typically is not available and extremely expensive. However, the network itself is very modular. If you look at the GSM handset, you have everything in one device. You have everything from the layer 0, layer 1, layer 2, layer 3, including call control, mobility management, and so on, including the user interface, what they call man-machine interface, including application software and so on. So it's all one big massive chunk that's hard to attack. But on the network side, the network is extremely modular. So there are all kinds of interfaces which are documented and which are exposed. And those interfaces are make it much easier because they are documented, and you can write some software that implements such an interface. Whereas these interfaces don't exist on a phone. On the phone, the interface is extremely high level. I mean, in a modern smartphone, you will get an API, make a phone call, and then you get, the call has been established, and that's the kind of interface you get. It's not any lower layers. And on the network side, the interfaces are much more low layer. However, how do you get the equipment? But if equipment is available, then the progress, I think, is much faster. And that's, we did in the OpenBSC project. How do you get started? You start to read the specifications. It's a lot. So the important task is identifying which documents you need to read and which not, and trying to puzzle them together. The complete GSM specification is more than 1,000 PDF documents. While you start to read about them, you get more knowledge. There are a couple of books, but not many, that can help. You obtain some actual equipment. In this case, BTSs have been bought on eBay by various people. Today, since GSM is already a relatively old technology, you can get some old surplus equipment on eBay, not too difficult way. Even today, as I speak, I think there's a couple of BTSs for somewhere around $500, $600 on eBay. It's just, you get one of these devices and then you reverse engineer the couple of bits that are missing. And work with the protocols that are specified, and then you can play with GSM protocol security. So this process is what has happened with OpenBSC over the last year. A project was started in somewhere October last year, and today it is at a status where you can run a complete GSM network, which is what a number of people have been using here at this very Congress. So if we look at the GSM network, we have a certain structure. We have the actual mobile phone here on the left-hand side, and the air interface is called UM interface. Then we have BTSs, which are dumb, stupid transceivers. They receive signals on a radio wave. They demodulate it, decode it, do some error correction, and so on. And then they forward it on a wired interface, which is called ABIS here. And then you get the base station controller, which controls a number of these BTSs. You can see a second one here. And you have all kinds of other equipment in the core network. So what we did in OpenBSC is we got one of these BTSs. We got a number of phones. And we implemented the remaining parts of the core network and simulate the core network to the BTS. And since this ABIS interface is specified in public documentation, you can actually do that. This is some terminology. I'm going to skip that slide. It's just if you want to check it out on the slides later, you can do that. The important interface is, as I said, UM for the air interface and ABIS for the interface between BTS and base station controller. The networks themselves, one thing to keep in mind, they're extremely asymmetric, which means they're very, very different from an end-to-end network like IP. If you work in GSM, never think about IP. It will just confuse you. It's completely different. You can find a lot of similarities between GSM networks and ISDN. So any ISDN knowledge you have is of a lot of use in GSM. Also, there's a lot of more similarity between SDH and maybe even ATM and GSM than IP networks, on the other hand. It's really very different. Just to illustrate that fact, in any IP-based network, you will have a packet that has a source and destination address. In GSM, you will never have that. The source and destination are implicitly defined in when the packet occurs in a time division multiplex scheme. And you have to know a lot of context about the history, when this time slot was established, in order to know from whom to whom the communication is happening. So never assume that there is source and destination information in a packet or something like that. You will only get the payload, and then you have to do some work to determine where it comes from and where it goes to. There's a number of network protocols that are interesting when we do GSM protocol level research. There's the radio layer, which is specified in what's called 04.04. These are TS technical specifications. So if you want to read up the documentation, you can use these numbers as references. There's the layer 2, which is called LAPDM, which is specified in 0406. LAPDM is, if anyone has worked with ISDN, there's also a LAPD protocol, and it's a mobile version of that protocol, which again is based on HDLC, which again is based on IBM's SNA networks in the 70s. So it's not something that is completely new. It has a lot of history. Just not inside no relation to the internet world. And then there's the layer 3. Layer 3 is really where a lot of attention in protocol level security should focus. Layer 3 includes things like radio resource control, establishing and tearing down communication channels. This is where, if you have listened to Dieter Spahr's talk just before this talk in a different room, this is where his attack is based on. It's exploiting the way how radio channels are established in the radio resource layer of the layer 3 protocol. There's mobility management, which keeps track which phone is where, in which cell. And then you have things like call control for establishing voice and circuit switch data calls. And then you have things like SMS, location services, USSD. I don't even remember what the acronym means. Something like unstructured whatever data. So you have other protocols on top of that. And those are the protocols where I think the security relevant things to be found. In the layer 1, well, this is the RF layer, yes, you can jam the radio, but that, it's not very exciting, I think. I mean, it's so easy, so why would you think a lot about it? The layer 2 is mostly about acknowledging and retransmitting packets, also not horribly exciting. So layer 3 is really where the attention should be. Now, on the ABIS interface, things are slightly different. What we have here is, as I said, the BTS is a transceiver. So it transceives between the ABIS wired interface and the UM interface, which is a radio-based interface. And the layer 1 and layer 2 of the UM interface, whatever your mobile phone talks to the network, is terminated at the BTS. The layer 3 is passed through into the core network. So you can look at the BTS as a vehicle to relay layer 3 data fragments or data segments between the phone and the core network. And the lower layers are terminated there. However, the ABIS protocol itself then has some lower layers that you need to implement or look at. Layer 1 is the E1 line normally, so regular ISDN E1 line. And in layer 2, you again have LAPD, which is a regular ISDN layer 2 with some slight modifications. And then you get into organization maintenance layer, radio subsystem layer, or radio signaling link, RSL. And then in the higher layers on top of that, then you have the layer 3 messages from the phone, which are encapsulated into RSL packets at that interface. And now, this is... as I say, those protocols are the things where you can look at. Now, some of you might have been in a talk that I was giving last year where I had just started playing with a BTS called a BS11, which is a big 48 kilogram Siemens monster, 200 watt power consumption, and so on. I bought that a couple of some time ago and was playing with that. Now, it's a timeline. You can look that up on the slide. I will skip that too. In August 2009, which is as you can see, 9 months after the project has started to implement this GSM network, OpenBSC, we had a field test at Hacking at Random 2009. Some of you might have been there, with two BTSs and more than 860 phones. That was the first real-world exposure to OpenBSC as an open-source implementation of GSM protocols. And I think security research is closely related to open-source implementations. Because if you would use a closed-source GSM network in a box product, how would you be able to send, you know, frames that are not compliant with the spec or to do anything that is not part of regular GSM network operation? So without an open source implementation of the protocols, I think security research is really, really hard and extremely limited on the protocol level. Okay, so OpenBSC is this GSM network in a box software. It implements the minimal subset of base station controller, mobile switching center, home location register, and SMS servicing center. It's free and open source software. Anyone can download it. Anyone can play with it. And it supports two models of BTSs so far. That's because these are the only two that I have access to. If you buy some different model on eBay and you want to make it work, you will have to add the vendor-specific or device-specific parts yourself. It has classic 2G signaling, voice, and SMS support, and it implements the various protocols that I've been talking about, like the 0408 radio resource mobility management call control protocols and the lower layer protocols. Now, that is sort of, okay, now we have a network running and we can register phones to our network. This is the fundamental tool we need to do security analysis on the protocol level. Next step, well, we can look at what kind of known problems are there in GSM networks. And if you do some research in that area, then you will very easily find things like no mutual authentication between the phone and network. So things like rogue network attacks are possible, man-in-the-middle attacks are possible, and this is what in the end enables the use of IMSI catchers for, well, law enforcement and more questionable purposes. Weak encryption algorithms are very well known. The fact that encryption is optional is also well known for people who have any interest in that subject. Well, there's the denial of service that Dieter has demonstrated earlier today. And we have also abominations like the radio resource location protocol, which very few people know about, which is, I think, has also been mentioned previously in other presentations at this event. But just to give you some background, it's a protocol how the network, and again, remember, the network does not authenticate itself. Anyone can claim to be a network. It's a protocol where the network can obtain the GPS fix of a mobile phone, or even raw GPS data. It's not raw GSM data. Why would you obtain GPS data? So there's legislation in the United States that requires all phones sold after 2006 to have some extended 911 for emergency call protocol features, and the operators are required to be able to locate the phone very precisely. And in order to do so, three technical methods exist, and in the GSM networks that exist in the US, an FCC report indicates that all the GSM operators have voted to use or have decided to use the radio resource location protocol, which means the phones have a GPS receiver built in. The GPS receiver might be extremely bad. It might not even tell you that this phone has a GPS receiver. What they do is they tune the receiver to the GPS frequency, receive the raw GPS data, and then feed the GPS data into the network so the network can use all kinds of other information and the current FMRS data and so on to calculate your position. And as I said, the network is not authenticated. So, of course, we can now send these packets and we can obtain positions, and it has been done at HAR. So if you have used your GSM phone in the test network we had it hacking at random and your phone supports that feature, then we have obtained your position at that event. Now, there are some other known security problems, and I think that's actually not one problem, but it is a whole class of problems or a dimension of problems. We have these proprietary GSM protocol stacks. There are only four of them, which is not a single point of failure, but, well, a quadruple point of failure. But not many implementations, and they have not received a lot of review because they've always been kept secret under very few eyes. And they run on a so-called baseband processor. Now, what is this? It's an ARM7 or ARM9 core. It runs some real-time operating system, often Nucleus, in some cases an L4 microkernel. There is no memory protection between tasks. Even on an ARM9, the MMU is not used. Then you have some kind of DSP in the model, depends on the vendor and so on. Now, the software stack on that baseband processor is, I have not seen any other way of implementing the stack yet is always written in C in assembly language. And it lacks modern security features. There's no stack protection. There are no non-executable pages. As I said, there's not even any memory protection between the tasks. There is no address space randomization. There is no virtual addresses in many cases at all. And this is what 4 billion people carry around with them all the day, exposed to a network which does not have to authenticate itself. Right? Keep that in mind. This is a known class of security problems in the GSM world. The fact that we haven't heard of exploits in that area or of any kind of attacks in that area is that the equipment and the knowledge, typically, as I explained in a lot of detail, is not readily available to many people. But that has never worked. As we know, security by obscurity will always come down in the end. I think in the case of GSM, it has taken way too long time already. GSM networks have first been deployed, I think, in 1990, 1991, around that time. And it's 18 years later, and we still haven't seen any serious attacks on those networks, which, as Carsten and Hendrik pointed out yesterday in their presentation on RFID systems, the fact that it hasn't been attacked does not mean that it is secure. It's just that, you know, all people know it's insecure and nobody really has done a lot in that area. So while OpenBSC was developed, there was a number of interesting observations. One of them is that many phones, if you don't know details about the protocol, then it's probably hard to understand, but there's a temporary mobile subscriber identifier called TIMSI. That's a number that identifies your SIM card for a given period of time in the mobile network. And of course, if you switch the network, then that temporary identifier no longer has any significance because it is allocated by one network and it has no significance outside that network. But there are many, many phones, and once again, if you find a bug in the protocol stack, since there are only so few implementations out there, chances are high that a large percentage of other phones will share the same bug. This temporary subscriber identifier is used even if you roam to a new network. So the new network will know your temporary identifier in the old network, then, of course, that can lead to something like, you could use that identifier then to claim to be the old phone, if you talk to the old network. Various phones crash when confronted with incorrect messages. Some people have noticed that at last year's Congress or attacking at random in August or now when they are using the network that we set up here at the events. Maybe accidentally we do something wrong, maybe we misread the spec or we did an implementation mistake, we send a bit different than the specification says and the phones crash or lock up or, you know, need a reset or something like that. So even without starting to intentionally send incorrect messages, you already see a lot of stability problems in many mobile phones. That, of course, tells a lot about the implementation quality of the stacks that we are dealing with. Also, there are tons of obscure options in the GSM specification, which, to the best of my knowledge, no real network uses or has ever used, or maybe no real network uses anymore. And those attack vectors, of course, or this opens new attack vectors by using rarely used and rarely tested code. There are things like voice group call or voice broadcast call support, or cordless telephony extensions for GSM, or all kinds of obscure things in the specification where we have no idea how many devices implement that and whether that has ever been tested or whether it's just some old code that was never tested but is in there. Now, how do we do actual protocol fuzzing on the GSM side? Well, we can, of course, try to fuzz the network from the handset side, but that is, as I said, relatively difficult since we cannot really run or get the level of access on mobile phones as we want. There are some projects working on it, and I hope in a year we can have some interesting news on that side. But the other thing, of course, is from the network side to fuzz the mobile phones, and that's very easy since rogue network attacks are easily possible. And then we can, of course, send arbitrary data to the phones, and the fuzzing target in that case is the GSM stack inside the baseband processor. We can, of course, also try to fuzz or do other nasty things in other interfaces like the ABIS interface. If we can get access to such an interface, then we can also inject data in there. However, access to such an interface in a regular network is probably not very easily possible, at least not without the cooperation of that network operator. But still it's possible to do. So the first thing I implemented was injecting messages into ABIS over IP. ABIS over IP is a modern variant of this ABIS protocol, where the backhaul from the BTS to the base station controller and to other elements of the network is no longer running directly on top of E1 lines and ISDN, but it is running on top of IP networks. And then they use two TCP connections, one for the organization and maintenance link, the other one for radio signaling link. And, of course, what we can do is build something like a proxy that we can put in between that equipment. So let's say you have one of these small BTSs somewhere in an office building or something, and you know it's running ABIS over IP, and you can somehow put yourself into the middle of that network. I mean, there are many ways how you can perform man-in-the-middle attacks in TCP/IP networks that you have access to. I don't need to elaborate on that. And if you manage to do that, then you can use a proxy, an application-level proxy for this ABIS protocol to inject messages in both ways. This injection proxy is now part of the OpenBSC code base. It's called IP access proxy. And you can put that, as said, in this ABIS interface, and it creates a couple of UDP sockets for injecting messages, both messages to the phone as well as messages to the core network, and also, you can inject any packets, you can send them to the BTS, to the phone, to the core network, whatnot. There is SSL support for this ABIS over IP protocol, but in many applications that I have seen, it is not actually used, so it's easy to man in the middle that. Of course, physical access to the Ethernet link then is sufficient. You can configure a system with two interfaces. One interface faces to the BTS and it claims to be the base station controller. The other interface faces to the base station controller and claims to be the BTS. Then you're in the middle and you run that proxy, and then you have the UDP sockets where you can inject random data or crafted data that you want to send to the communication stream. Next step was to implement a couple of SCAPI functions, layers, to actually implement the headers of those protocols. So there's the IP access, which is this ABIS over IP protocol header, there is the radio signaling link header, there's the radio, radio link layer header. And then the actual layer 3 protocol messages for radio resource, mobility management, and call control. And using that, we can actually use SCAPI and the regular options like randomly or cycling through certain bytes in the packet and send them to either the phone or some other unit in the network. However, of course, injecting them at the ABIS protocol level is... it has some problems, right? The base station controller of the regular network is still in charge, and the phone is in charge, so you can only send data to a phone when an actual radio connection to that phone is established. I mean, regularly, if your phone is idle, there is no active connection between the phone and the network. Only in case they want to talk to each other, they establish such a channel. So you can only piggyback on existing radio layer connections, which is, not quite as nice. If you don't want to work with an existing mobile network, but if you say, let's run our own network, we just start OpenBSC, run our own network, and then since we are the base station controller, we can, at our will, we can establish those radio connections. And once again, the network is not authenticated. So, of course, this is not, like, if you do this with your own phone, you can do that. If you do that with other people's phones, you become a criminal. But you fire up your base station controller, you make your phone register to it, which is relatively easy to achieve. And then you can use the space station controller to establish the radio channel, and you have the radio channel, and through that radio channel you can send the various layer 3 messages. Right now this only works from within the OpenBSC process. We don't have an external interface to that yet, but I'm working on that right now, and I think the code should be finished in a day or two. Fortunately, it was not able to finish before this presentation. Then we also have the UDP sockets in there, and then once again we can send use the same SCAPI plugins to send messages to the phone. We have implemented as part of the silent call feature. It's a feature that not many people know, which is also used in law enforcement. So in any mobile network, from the operator's side, you can establish a radio connection to the phone, but you cannot actually transfer an SMS or start a phone call or something. And in this case, there is a permanent radio connection between your phone and the network, and the phone will continuously transmit packets, and the network will transmit packets back. Typically, in law enforcement applications, there is no data transferred over that channel. You just establish the channel so the phone permanently transmits and you can pinpoint where the phone is. That's the typical application of that. Your phone will not show you that it is doing anything. It will just be as quiet as it is in other, you know, there's no indication to the user whatsoever. And since GSM is a master-slave protocol, the phone will not close that connection ever. In the GSM network, the network tells the phone what to do. If the network says open a channel, then the phone will open the channel, and the phone will not close that channel unless the network says close the channel. So since we don't send that command, the channel stays open indefinitely, and we can send as much data as we want to the phone back and forth at whatever speed the radio channel has been configured to have. So now the tools are available. Multiple solutions out there for sending arbitrary protocol data. The same that you can do with OpenBSC and a regular conventional BTS, you can also do with OpenBTS, which is another open source project in the GSM world. It's the same capability is there. You can establish this call, the silent call. You can never close the radio channel, and you can send random data to the phone or whatever specifically crafted data. So, the tools are there. My question to everyone in the audience would be, would you rather want to be the 100,000th person to do some fuzzing on a TCP/IP protocol, or do you want to be the 10th person to ever fuzz mobile handsets? Tools are there. Use them. So, where do we go from here? The tools exist. Of course, now it's a matter of maybe creating some more sophisticated tools than just the SCAPI plugin, maybe some templates, some packets, find actual bugs in the phones, document those bugs, maybe create a database or a wiki about weird protocol-level behaviors of mobile phones. It's up to the security community to make use of those tools. As I said, I think TCP/IP security in the 21st century is quite boring. Look at things that other people have not looked yet, not at the same thing all over again. Boldly go where no man has gone before. What we're working on also at the moment is GPRS and Edge support in OpenBSC. Maybe late quarter one next year, 2010, we will have something there. Then we can also exercise the packet network part of the protocol stack on the phone. We can send data to a phone without the mobile network operator's network in between, because the TCP/IP networks that are used for GPRS, there's heavy filtering and whatnot. And once we have that support in OpenBSC, we can really know what we send to the phone without anyone interfering to that. 3G support is also being worked on. I don't know when that will appear. And we're working on actually the phone side layer one. So we can do the same things we can do to the phones now. We can, of course, we also want to do them to the network, because somehow we need, of course, to verify the stability and robustness of OpenBSC. We need, of course, some tool to verify that. Yeah, MMS is an interesting thing. It's application layer. We don't really do much work in that area. Other people are doing that. However, today they always have to send it through a regular operator network, and they might do filtering, so you never really know what kind of bugs in the phone are protected by filters in the specific operator network. Once you claim to be an operator, you can circumvent all of that. The radio resource location protocol also needs more exploration. We need more detailed statistics, how many phones support it, how reliably it works, and we need to find out how we can disable it in popular phones, because I think many people do not like the idea that anyone who claims a network can get their GPS position. Further reading, well, there is the OpenBSC project. There is OpenBTS as well. There's AirProbe, which is a protocol analysis tool. As I said, the ABIS injection proxy is already in, and the silent call feature, those are part of the regular OpenBSC distribution. The SCAPE implementation I will release later today. We'll also put it in OpenBSC Git. So using those tools and the right hardware, you can have some fun with GSM. Okay, well, thanks for your attention. Questions?
Well, thank you, Harold. If you've got any questions, there are two mics in the middle of the aisle. Please go to them and ask your question.
Yeah, of course, your questions need to be recorded for surveillance purposes, right?
All
so
right.
You have to use the mic, otherwise, you know. So, yeah, go ahead.
All right. Is there any effort to basically get off the air the transmission between phone and the BTS? So basically, we don't break the law when we test this stuff, so we don't use this forbidden non-public use frequencies?
I'm not quite sure whether I understood your question. So you want some tool that obtains the transmission or that receives the transmission between the mobile phone and the BTS?
I want basically to take this off the air. So either do something at the physical layer, so basically connect them via some direct electrical connection, not use the air, or use some, let's say, proxy.
Okay, so you want to avoid using the RF frequency and you want a direct connection between the phone and the BTS. Okay, so what you can do is you can use a dummy load at your BTS. A dummy load is a fake antenna that will just burn all the energy. And then if you have the phone, let's say, like 1 to 5 centimeters distance of that, you will still be able to receive it. But at, you know, even 20 or 30 centimeters, you will not receive a signal anymore.
All right.
The other option you have is, of course, to obtain a test license. I mean, the work I'm doing and the work we're doing here at the CCC, we have 5 transceivers running here in this building in GSM legitimately with an official license from the government authorities. And that cost... And this is called an experimental license, and the cost involved for a single frequency per annum for a year is 130 euros. So that's not an expensive proposition. Here, since we have 5 channels, it's slightly more expensive, but this is for Germany. I know in the Netherlands at Hacking at Random, we also had official permission. In Vienna, when we did a security workshop on GSM, there also was an official license. So in all the countries, at least in Western free countries, I think there should be an option how you can get a test permit to do experimentation and research on GSM systems.
All right, that's fair enough. And can we take this one layer above? So basically we don't actually need this BTS hardware. So we use only software and we take some, let's say, some direct connection before the transceiver in a specific set of mobile phones or something like that?
I don't think that is possible. In the phone itself, everything is implemented as, you know, it's one baseband processor and it does everything from application layer down to the radio layer, and you don't get access to any intermediate interfaces.
Okay, so you don't get the chance to get any data from there and proxy it from some...
No. I mean, okay. if you, let's say, if you have, if you already have reverse engineered a lot of details of a particular baseband software, then you might be able to replace some existing code with your own sort of proxy for that, the layer two protocol messages. But I think it's extremely hard to do, and I wouldn't bother, honestly. Of course, if you happen to have the source code to one of the GSM stack implementations, some people do, then you can compile that as a library and then just feed it messages in and see what happens when it comes out. But that is not something that the normal, you know, average security researcher can do.
All right. Thank you.
The other mic.
These IP access, sorry, my voice is gone. These IP access boxes that you use, do they do 3G already?
No. The boxes, the BTSs that are in use in this installation today here at the Congress are 2.75G, if you want to use that vocabulary. So they support GSM, GPRS, and Edge, but nothing beyond that. There are 3G models, and of course everyone knows there are femtocells, and we also have, well, did some research on various femtocell models already. They're relatively nice devices for 3G. However, the big issue is that there are a lot of tools missing for open source developers. 3G is implemented almost entirely in ASN1 packed encoding rules, PER, not related with DER and BER and all the stuff that people are familiar with. And apart from an Erlang module, there is no implementation of those encoding rules for ASN1. So the very fundamental tools to play with 3G protocols are missing today.
Okay.
Thank
so
you.
Anyone who is an expert on ASN1 and maybe on even on packed encoding rules, please do something. Help us out.
What do you think are the chances to, for example, take a very old phone? Maybe you take an old Mercedes or BMW with the first generation built-in telephone that was very big, and then say, okay, we want to make a man-in-the-middle attack. So you book in with the phone into the network and have your own BTS maybe somewhere in a shielded room, and then you sit with your phone, call into your BTS, and the BTS goes to the phone of the car, and the car goes to the network.
Yeah, that is a typical man-in-the-middle effort. The question is how accurate do you want to have it? The problem, I mean, of course you can just have a BTS here and a phone here and then connect the audio somehow.
No, that's fake. There should be real. So that it feels like being maybe in O2. So I am sitting in my basement and I use O2 in the frequency of 900 megahertz, for example.
Yeah. The problem here is that you need a phone where you can access the lower levels of the protocol again. That's the issue, right? So for the network side, we now have open source protocol implementations that we can get at all the layers we need, but on the phone we cannot. So in order to sort of be a real man in the middle, even for authentication and all these bits in the GSM network, we need access to the layer two messages on a mobile phone, and that is something that which we don't have in any of the phones.
So, but if you, for example, find a very old phone that was filled with tons of DSPs, like the BS11 was filled with lots of devices, and so if you find a big old car phone that is quite bulky, maybe you find a place where you can solder and get the signals.
It might be possible, yes. I personally would not want to go that way, since yes, you can implement it for yourself, but it will be very hard to reproduce for anyone else because those phones are very few and it's limited to GSM 900. And I mean, as I said, there are projects working on this and we hope we will have something by next year, by the end of next year. But then we actually want something like a complete open source implementation of a phone, like open BTS, but the other way.
Okay. Is there a project that is doing quite well in this way?
Well, Dieter and me are working on something, but it's very early stage, so I don't want to talk too much about it.
So, but would it be possible to take some FPGAs and software-defined radio and do something this way?
Of course. I mean, as OpenBTS shows you can take the USRP software-defined radio, you can attach it to a PC, and you can run the network side of GSM. And of course, if you can do that, you can. I mean, there's no limitation why you should not be able to do the same for the phone side. It's just a question of doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome. Question over there.
My question, I think, was already answered just now. I wanted to ask if you plan to make a phone with an open source, with an open GSM implementation. So, like the OpenMoco you worked on, but the one that you can see actually what the GSM part of it is doing, which is not a closed GSM part, but something you can see what's happening.
Well, I'm not really interested in building actual phones. I'm interested in building a phone-side protocol stack and some like development board or something for that. Yes, and with some luck, I will be able to have. I mean, I will have sufficient time during next year to be able to present something of that sort next year at the 27th C3. But it will not be a phone form factor or an end-user usable device or anything like that. It will just be something like, as I said, you can say, well, OpenBTS for the phone side or something, yeah.
And would that be usable in any normal network? For example, do you have to be certified in some way to use this to connect it to some carrier's network or...?
Technically, of course not. Legally, you might, but I'm not aware, actually, that... I don't know how it works in detail. I mean, the regarding certification, there are multiple aspects. One of them is regulatory approval. So the approval that you can operate this equipment within the European Union or the United States or wherever you might be. That is something you can obtain. It's a matter of some level of cost. It's a low five-digit sum that needs to be spent. But you can do it, and if you look at products like ISDN for Linux in the past, they have done it. It's an open source ISDN protocol stack implementation, and in order to attach it to Germany's network some 10 years ago or even more, you require to have a license, and the ISDN for Linux guys did that. They did the conformance testing, obtained the license, and there was an open source ISDN protocol stack that you were officially permitted to attach to the public network.
Just a quick interjection, sorry. Didn't the GSM spec say something about should not with regard to making things inaccessible to the user? Is this obfuscation not some part of the GSM spec?
No, not. I've never read anything like that. There are some things that are required by the spec. So, for example, every phone is required to have a way to show you that the current radio channel is not encrypted. But at the same time, there is a requirement that the SIM card that the operator issues can override that setting and can prevent the phone from displaying that the call is not encrypted. Those are in the spec, but to the best of my knowledge, those are not, like, the compliance, the radio conformance testing is being done by the regulatory, as required by the regulatory authorities, and they don't care about that. They care about spectral purity of your signal, that you don't interfere with other radio equipment. That's the kind of requirements. In the United States, I know there is a specific test that a phone manufacturer has to pass, which the operators put on the mobile phone manufacturers if they want to sell their phone through that operator. But if you don't have such an interest, I don't think there is a reason. Of course, the network operators could come up with, well, if you buy that SIM card from us, you certify that you will only use a phone that has officially received permission from us to be used on our network. But I've never seen anything like that in terms of services or any thing. And to be honest, I believe that a lot of the cheap Chinese phones that you can, GSM phones that you can buy today, and that you can just put your SIM card in and use in any country of the world, I doubt that they have ever applied for the regulatory approval or any of these permissions. So that's already happening. And that's the reason why we have duplicate IMEIs or phones that don't have IMEIs at all and all these things. So I think there's very little that can be done. Yes, you can put it in a contract and say it's illegal, but that's sort of all you can do from an operator point of view.
Thank you.
And then, you as the manufacturer of such an open source device, you could then try to use competition regulation. Say, this is anti-competitive. Why can my phone not be used? And I'm not sure how that will turn out.
Well, Apparently, there's still a lot to develop in the world of mobile networks and telephones. Harold opened a whole new world for me, maybe for you too. How did you like this lecture? Yeah?
And
we'd like to see this back on our website. You can give feedback on this lecture. If you go to the schedule and you click on the OpenBSC presentation, then you can give your feedback. So please do that.